Today is the 27th of March, 2024, and the time is 11:02 a.m. My name is Preeti Sri Venkatram, and I'm conducting this interview over Zoom with Zai Whittaker for the Making of Indian Conservation Project. I'm currently in Bangalore, and she's at the Madras Crocodile Bank Trust in Chennai. Thank you once again for agreeing to be a part of this project. And we could begin today's session by maybe you could share when and where were you born and what are some of your earliest childhood memories?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. I was born in April 21st, 1954, which today sounds like some prehistoric age. And of course, it was a very, very different time. I mean, when I look back on my childhood, and then as we saw, for instance, technology develop, I remember the first, in those days, gadgets meant gadgets.
Sorry, where were you born?
In Bombay, Mumbai. So I remember the first time that we were introduced to a recording, actually. And my uncle, who was an engineer, had come back from MIT. And he'd brought this enormous machine, which was a tape recorder with a spool about this big. And he installed it in our dining, in our living room where we were all sitting. And I think my sister and I were playing some board game. And after a while, he told us to listen. And we heard our own voices for the first time. And our cook, Paul, wonderful Paul, came in the middle and said, dinner is ready. So that had also been recorded. And we were just rolling on the floor laughing. We thought it was so hilarious.
How old were you at this time?
I must have been maybe 7 or 8. So we grew up in a beautiful house and garden created by my parents with very little money. They were not rich. And both my parents, their priorities were writing and conservation. These were the two things that were the focus of their lives. And so we grew up in this environment where we just assumed that this was the way to live. You know, you worked for the community, you worked for the environment, you did whatever you could. And I think even before we could write ourselves, we always sort of sat down very seriously at a desk with paper and pencil, because that's what we'd seen our parents doing.
Was it something you enjoyed as well, or is it just because you saw your parents doing it?
No, enjoyed. Yeah, that was that, and being in the garden, being outdoors were our two things that we loved. And my mother was very insistent that we be outside as much as we could. So when we were sitting in the room reading for too long in our bedroom, she would say, chalo, chalo, bahir niklo. That was her chorus, get out. And we would go out into the garden on the swing or climb a tree or sit outside and read. That was better than reading inside. And it was something, it was a pretty famous garden. My mother was a landscape artist who grew up in Japan. So she had that very, that sense of very minimalistic Japanese aesthetics, both inside the house as well as in the garden. My father was had a business with his brother, but that was not a priority. And so we...
What was the business to do with?
They made conveyor belts. I remember that. They were the first company to make the baggage conveyors for airports.
I see.
And I think there were a lot of brains going around, but my father was more interested in bird watching and the environment than in making money. So we sort of went downhill financially in a very genteel sort of way because money was never talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there were plenty of people who helped out, like my grandfather gave them some money to build their house and garden. And my grandmother on the other side also was very generous and very helpful. And I think
this was your paternal grandfather or your maternal grandfather?
Maternal. And I think everyone, both with my granduncle Saleh Mamu and my father, I think people were just very proud that, you know, these two were doing such important work and happy to help whenever they could.
Mm-hmm.
So Saleh Mamu, of course, was, you know, regular visitor to our place.
Mm-hmm.
And we also shared, well, I say shared, but it belonged to my grandmother, my grandparents, my mother's parents, a beautiful property on the beach in Kihim, which is where Saleh Mamu actually spent some crucial chapters of his life when he came back from Burma and didn't have a job. He and his wife, Tehmina, moved to Kihim, and that's where he did his famous weaver bird study. And then again, when he was, you know, in sort of the last chapter of his life, when he was unwell and had cancer, that's where he went and lived for the last few years. But every summer holiday, school holidays were spent in Kihim, and which was basically a main house of brick, and then with these what we call jhopras, coconut leaf rooms scattered around. So my sister and I had one, Saleh Mamu had one, my parents had one, and so on. And my grandmother just had all these people descending on her during the summer, eating up hundreds of mangoes. They had a mango orchard at the back. And, you know, we spent our day on the beach collecting shells, swimming, roaming around various backyards, because the whole beach had only our family on living on it.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have been some 20 odd houses, but they were all uncles and aunts and cousins of various degrees of closeness. And so you could just go into any garden and raid their fruit, or go into the kitchen and, you know, say, well, I'm hungry, give me some food. So it was, I mean, now that I think back on it, it was just really a magical childhood. And our own home in Andheri and the home in Kihim really defined it, because it, you know, we were surrounded by wonderful people and a lot of idealism within the family and friends, because mm-hmm. my father by then was quite a well-known naturalist and ornithologist himself, worked closely with Saleh Ali. And so
was he interested in these subjects before he got married, or did this interest come about post-marriage?
His passion before and after and right up to the end was horses. He loved horses. So that continued. But probably being married to my mother, who was Salimamu's niece, did make a big difference. They were quite a power couple in conservation before the word even became known. So, so his friends and acquaintances from different cities in India, different countries, came and stayed with us, because that was the time I must have been in my teens when he started WWF India. He was a vice president of IUCN. He was the honorary secretary of the BNHS and also an editor of its journal. So it was an amazing set of people that we met as we were growing up.
You had mentioned that you something you were doing a lot as a child was reading. I wanted to ask, what kind of books were you reading as a child?
Well, I started reading much later, and I was a very lazy reader, but I loved books and stories. So the image in my mind related to books is that my sister is lying on the carpet reading. She was a year and a half older to me. And I jump on her back, take away her book, give her my book and say, par, read it to me. So she had to read it to me. Fortunately, she was one of the most generous and good-natured people you can imagine. So she would do that. And my favorite early book was Wind in the Willows and Robin Hood. And I cried every time we came to the part where I think it was Will Scarlet who died, and both of us would be sitting there teary-eyed.
And in school, what were subjects that you liked? What were subjects you didn't
well,
like?
Well, just to finish about books,
sure.
We had a very limited selection of children's books in those days. Of course, now there's just every year there are mountains of children's books coming out of our country as well. Wonderful books, wonderful stories. But then it was Bobbsey Twins and Heidi and, five or six of those iconic books. And in school, my favorite subject was, or the only subject that I really liked was English. I loved writing essays and stories. And for some reason, I don't remember liking school. I remember going very unwillingly, creating headaches and stomach aches and trying to stay home and not being a good student at all. I think one of the things that I really minded is that I was always being compared to my sister Shama, who was a blue stocking, an academic, very bright. And she did her best to keep a low profile so that I didn't have to suffer that comparison. Of course, she was naturally very bright. The teachers loved her. She was the one who'd always done her homework. I never did mine. So, there was a huge difference there. But we went to the Bombay International School, which my parents had been, I think there were five or six couples who had started the school, and they were one of them. So we went there just when it started. So there were just like 20 or 30 of us kids. And all I remember of the early years in school is running around screaming and fighting with one another. And our parents were our teachers. Then, of course, it grew into a very big and very successful school.
What were other hobbies as a child?
Well, we went out on picnics a lot. Weekends were that. And we loved being out in the forest and sailing our boats on little streams. In those days, you know, our population was not even half what it is today. So you had these beautiful, empty, forested spaces that were yours, you know. So we loved picnics. We had a badminton court in the garden, so we played badminton, and cousins from next door would come and join us. And reading and music. Had an old gramophone. And in Kihim, my grandparents, who had lived in Japan, in fact, that's where my mother was born and grew up.
What took them to Japan?
My grandfather was working for a company there, Burma Shell initially, and then another one I can't remember now. But it, so they had brought back this gramophone and some 78 records, including Paul Robeson and some really screechy Chinese opera singers. And it was difficult to get those needles, his master's voice needles. They weren't always available. But we would use acacia thorns, and each thorn inserted in that player would play one side of one record. But by the end of the song, it was slowing down, and you know, Paul Robeson's voice got even deeper than it was. So yeah, a lot of outdoors activities.
And were there opportunities for travel outside Bombay, Maharashtra?
Well, we just wanted to go to Kihim whenever we could. That was our safe haven. But every year, not during the summer, because that was Kihim time, my father, however badly Dynacraft was doing, he would take us on what they called a GET, Great Educational Tour, for the family. And we, one year we went to Rajasthan. In
Sorry,
our
that
old...
was his term for it?
Yeah.
Or is that your term?
No, that's his term.
Okay.
So we went to Rajasthan one year. We went up north to Mussoorie, where I had a Saleh Mahmood's brother was living there. We came south one year. Yeah, so every year we were taken on this educational tour, to usually to a series of national parks and sanctuaries.
Was that something you enjoyed? What did you make of these trips?
Very much. I didn't enjoy the monuments, and but my sister did. But I did enjoy the national parks very much. We went to Kashmir one year, I remember, and ate lots of cherries, and met some interesting friends of my parents, one of whom was a brilliant ornithologist, a young British man called Jasper Newsome, who was, I think if I remember right, his heritage was the Churchills on one side and the Huxleys on the other. But unfortunately, and he started helping Salemamu with his bird banding camps in Bharatpur. But unfortunately, over the years, I think got involved in drugs and became very ill and died quite young.
Were you also like encouraged to hang out with peers of your own age group, or were your friends just by extension, your parents' friends were sort of your friends?
Well, you know, the thing was that Andheri in those days was the boondogs. It's in the middle of the city now. You couldn't even recognize it. But in those days, we could hear jackals at night. And it was just woods all around our house. So to get to school in Babulnath, it was a 1.5 or 2 hour bus ride. And when we invited friends over, they'd say, oh, it's so far away, you come. And we'd say, well, it's far for us as well to come to your place. So we were, I think, pretty much left to our own resources. Fortunately, my sister and I were close in age. My brother Murad went off to boarding school in Mayo. And we had a bunch of cousins living quite two houses of cousins close by. So I think we had enough company. And we had our books. And we had our cycles. We would cycle up and down. Those roads were empty. And sometimes we would, our gang of six or seven cousins would cycle to RA Milk Colony. We were all really small, but there was no traffic on the roads. And once in a while you heard a truck coming. So all of us would scuttle to the side of the road and get off our bikes, wait for it to go and then get on again. Yeah, so it was very much that kind of life. Very, I think we were very self-sufficient and really enjoyed ourselves.
And in those years in school, in senior classes, were there any subject choices that you got to make, or were did you have to study all?
So there was basically the humanities and the sciences. So I took languages and social studies.
This was a choice you had to make in the 10th grade?
Yeah.
Okay. So which are the subjects?
So in those days, it was that we went up to 11th in school.
Okay.
So I think it was the 9th grade where we made that choice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you chose languages. What were your subjects in 10th and 11th? Oh, sorry, 9th to 11th?
Social studies, Hindi, biology, you could take one science subject, math till the 10th grade, I think, and social studies was split into history and geography.
And writing was something you were doing as a child as well?
Yes. And my parents were really encouraged us. I think they were very good at encouraging us, but not making a, giving us a false feeling about, you know, being very diagnostic, but at the same time, encouraging. I think that's a real skill that teachers should also have, like the present day business of rah-rahing everything a child does, I think gives them a bad head start in life. And I'm very grateful to my parents for you know, being so fair and honest with us. And at the same time, taking a lot of trouble to find avenues, for instance, for us to publish our little poems and stories. And there was a magazine called Junior Statesman in those days, edited by a man called Desmond Doig. And my horrible little poem got published there, and I was just...
Why do you say horrible little poem?
I can't bear to see it now.
Okay.
But so there was that. And then I wrote a little book when I was, must have been maybe 10, 11, about a rabbit called Gumak Spindle. And his adventures. And his adventures weren't very exciting at all. But anyway, so we sent it to the Children's Book Trust. And of course, it came back, but with a very, very nice, very encouraging letter. Probably the best rejection letter I've ever had, which I still hang on to. And my mother was the literary editor of a magazine called Quest. So she had friends like Geeve Patel and Nissim Ezekiel, the poets. And they took the time to help us with our writing, both Shamma and myself. So very grateful for that. And I still have some of Nissim's little notes to me. No, Zai, I would not say this is a good poem, but 1, 2, 3, 4.
How did you handle these rejection letters?
Well, we kept working. We knew that writing wasn't an easy pastime, but we enjoyed it and we kept at it. So between my mother's literary friends and my father's conservationist friends, we very often had really interesting people staying with us or coming to lunch. We were always encouraged to be there and listen and, you know, absorb whatever was going on. So that was a very rich part of our childhood.
Are there any particular incidents you would like to share about your parents' friends coming over and how your interactions
well,
were?
Well, Sim, of course, you know, was a huge presence, extremely funny and just great fun to listen to. And he was there quite often. He was a very close friend of my mother's. Geeve as well, poet and painter, Geeve Patel. On my father's side, people like Sir Peter Scott, we met George Schaller. I think one of the most amusing, interesting people, or two or three of them actually from Gerald Durrell's zoo. They were coming to India to get animals for their zoo. One was a lioness from Junagar Zoo, which he called Zahida after me. And then I would get postcards saying Zahida has been very naughty and has not eaten her food.
Who was this person? Sorry,
this was a person called Quentin Bloxham.
Okay.
And he was a keeper in Gerald Durrell Zoo.
I see.
So we loved his time there. And I remember taking him on the public bus to Victoria Gardens, where the two lions were housed before he took them back to Jersey. So yeah, a lot of fascinating people.
What do you recollect about meeting George Schaller?
I recollect that I was passing around chocolates. I was very small. We were all in Kihim. The IUCN meeting at which Project Tiger was launched had just happened in Delhi. And Baba had invited all these big names to Kihim. I think George was there at that time. Maybe it was another visit. But anyway, I had this box of chocolates, and there were many small ones and one big one on which my eye was. And I was hoping nobody would take that. So he looked at me and pretended to grab that and then laughed and put it back. And we took him to Borivali National Park. And I got an acacia thorn in my forehead, I remember, very painful. But also years later, after Ram and I were married, we were in New York, and we went to the New York Zoological Society, where George was based. And in spite of being who he is, he made the time to meet us and took us in for a cup of coffee. Yeah, extremely, you know, humble and wonderful person is what I remember.
And as a child, what was your opinion, or how did you view your parents' professions, and how did you, or what did you make of the work that they were doing? And
I think as a child, one doesn't think about it in that way. Now, looking back and seeing their books and articles and things around me, I feel really proud of them. And I think very often, and my brother and I talk about this very often, of how lucky we were to, my sister has sadly passed away, but we speak often about how lucky we were to have the life that we had.
And as a child, did you foresee yourself following in their footsteps, or as a child, did you have other goals and dreams?
I mean, as a child, what dreams does one have? It's all about the moment, right? But as I, maybe when I was college age, one of the things I was thinking of doing is translation, because I had done a few courses in German. But before I finished the last one, I had met Rom. So, you know, directions changed.
Is there anything else about your childhood that you would like to speak about for the session today that we haven't already covered?
Well, another very important people in our lives were the cook, Paul, and the maid, Mary. And they were related. Mary was his mother-in-law. So she had come into the household when my sister was born. So she'd been there for a long time. And Paul was an amazing cook. He also was our driver. And for us, for Shama and myself, they were really like our family. My memory, which my mother always tells me is playing tricks with me, is that they were out a lot. They were both very active in conservation and writing in the democratic movement. They were members of several different committees on democracy and freedom. So they were out quite a bit, and Paul and Aya were our two, the two people that we spent a lot of time with. So they were Goans, full of fun and laughter. And they always made what we thought was much tastier food than we had at home. Our food was usually, especially for dinners, it was Western. Because my mother came from that kind of background, so a casserole or something, while there was a mean fish curry being cooked in Paul and Aya's house, so we would sneak out to the back and sit down and eat with them. And then, of course, Kihim. I mean, you know, you have this whole beach of like 2 or 3, 2.5, 3 kilometers just with nothing but your family's homes. You know, you pick and choose who you want to spend time with. Just go and sit down in their veranda for the whole day if you like. Go swimming every day. It was always mango season, of course, being May. So, you know, lots of different varieties of mangoes to be eaten. Salimamu was often there. So, you know, spend time with him. He was an extremely funny companion.
Any anecdotes with him that you would like to share?
You know, it's difficult to do that because so much of his humor was connected with his gestures, his tone of voice. He was a great mimic, so he would, you know, mimic people. Some stories that he said again and again. I mean, one very well-known story is of the telegram that he sent to his wife's parents when they had that pandemic in 1920, I think, where a lot of people died, and it affected her family very much. So he was interested in Tehmina, who was studying in England at that time, and wanted to impress her family. So he sent a telegram to her father saying, shall I come and help? And in those days, of course, telegrams often got misspelled and in the post, because there were two or three different people who had to type it out on Morse code and then on the typewriter. So the telegram they got was small income, send help. So he was very mortified when she told him about that. And then another time, you know, we used to make cakes for our for people's birthdays, our grandparents, uncles, aunts. So I made this cake for Salimamu's birthday, which was a big sort of massive stony looking thing, and he tried to cut it and he couldn't, and it fell, and so he hopped around the room pretending that it had broken his foot, and that was a very typical Salimamu joke. So yeah, a lot of laughter is what I remember.
So since you said you had about half an hour, 40 minutes for today,
I should stop now.
Thank you so much for today's session. I'll just stop the recording.
Okay.